Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Online, on your mobile, and on FM.
From the home of time.
This is Maritime Radio, Greenwich.
When the red, red Robin comes bob, bob, bobbing along, along, there'll be no more sobbing when he starts robbing his home. Sweet song. Happy. What if I be blue? Now I'm walking through fields of flowers. Rain may glisten, but still I listen for hours and hours. I'm just a kid again, doing what I did again, singing a song. When the red, red Robin comes bob, bob, bobbing along.
So a very good evening to you and welcome to Charlton Live here on Maritime Radio on your Sunday evening. My name is Louis Mendez and joining me in the studio here for a very special episode of Charlton Live is Mr. Tom Wallin. How are you doing, Tom?
All right, Louis, yeah, good.
Yeah, good. Excellent stuff. And we've got a special guest in the studio tonight, Matt Wright. How are you doing, Matt?
Yeah, not sure it's special, but yeah, good evening. Great to be here.
Yeah, and the reason you're here is a very good reason, of course. You've provided us with a really spectacular Chris Powell interview. 5 years ago, hard to believe it is, but 5 years ago since Dave Lockwood shouted that word champions here at the Valley after that game against Wickham when we just won the championship. And obviously the man that masterminded that, Sir Chris Powell, as he's known around these parts, we're going to hear from him this evening. Matt, you did an interview with him and you're kind enough to let us have it.
Yeah, so I did an interview for the Voice of the Valley fanzine, now on sale, www.voiceofthevalleyonline.com, obviously. But yes, we just thought that the way Chris speaks is obviously very passionate, he's very evocative, so we thought that you might like it as well. So yeah, happy to be here and talk about it all.
Yeah, so we're very grateful to both Matt and to Rick at the Voice of the Valley fanzine for letting us have this audio. And as Matt mentioned there, it's definitely worth going out and getting a copy because there's more stuff from the interview in there. And obviously there's lots of other great stuff in the Voice of the Valley fanzine as well. Also on tonight's show, of course, we very briefly look back at yesterday's 2-1 win against Chesterfield that keeps that winning run going of one game, is it? Two games now, is it?
Three of the last four.
Three out of the last, yeah. Basically, champions form. Just come at the wrong time of the season, sadly. And we're going to hear from Carl Robinson, the Charlton manager you're all looking forward to hearing from on tonight's show, I'm sure, on that show. Obviously, we want to hear what you guys have to say I think this is more of a reminiscing show rather than anything else. We will look back at yesterday's game if you want to mention anything about yesterday's game, or perhaps the news that was revealed by sort of Carl Robertson yesterday, sort of half revealed about Johnny Jackson. You can let us know about that, but also we want to know your memories of that fantastic record-breaking season here at the Valley 5 years ago now, the 101-point season as we won League One. It seems like such an alien world now when you talk about it, but like we said, we want to know what you guys remember about that season. So there's plenty of ways you can get in contact with us. You can email us studio@charltonlive.co.uk, or you can tweet us at Charlton Live, or you can head over to the Charlton Life forum where you can leave a comment on our thread for tonight's show on there. But right, obviously, as we've said, tonight is 5 years since a very special weekend. 5 years ago this weekend, certain Dave Lockwood shouted out this special word. There we go. I mean, we all remember where you that special day and where you were. I guess I know exactly where I was, up in the northwest quadrant. Matt, you were working at the club at the time, so I guess the culmination of a season like that as a supporter as well must have been very special.
Yeah, I mean, it's not very heartwarming or so on, but I remember it just being a season of incredibly hard work behind the scenes. We were fairly short-staffed just throughout the season, myself and a few others. And then right towards the end, you know, there was just this great reward. And throughout the season, it was just the football and the results and the success that managed to keep you going.
Mm. Now, obviously, the way that, I guess, the build-up to that season was with Chris Powell coming in beforehand, and we'll start to hear the interview in a minute, but he had such a job on his hands to turn around the way the club was at that time. And we were sort of we ended up finishing in mid-table in League One in his first sort of half season, but it was just the aura around the place. Of we were still suffering a relegation hangover from a couple of years before, and just a couple of years further before that was a Premier League relegation. I mean, we were just on such a downward spiral, and it just before Powell came in, it felt like we were never ever going to get out of it.
Yeah, I mean, that was true, obviously, on the pitch. Off the pitch, behind the scenes, you know, morale was really low in the club. Finances were terrible. You had to go jump through any kind of hoops to get, you know, a penny, never mind any sort of significant investment in any minor thing that you wanted to do to try and make your life and your job easier. And then Chris came in, and it was very clear from the outset that he made clear that it was a massive job. But then, as he explains, there was the nadir at Dagenham and Redbridge.
Mm.
But from that point on, everyone knew the size of the task, and everyone embraced that task, I think, was the key thing.
Yeah. And Tom, as supporters, obviously we weren't involved in anything to do with working at the club there, so we were sort of outsiders watching on. But when Chris Powell came back, obviously he was a hero at the club from his playing days, represented England whilst playing for the club. I think three playing spells altogether. Yeah. I mean, just to have someone like that at the helm of the club, it just gives you that lift, doesn't it?
I've still got a screenshot somewhere, because I was up at uni at the time, and Parky left, and I remember checking the odds on Skybet, and I think for a long while Dennis Wise was favourite. And then one day I looked on, and Chris Powell was favourite out of nowhere, and I still got a screenshot of his odds, and obviously then he got the job. And as you say, we're a club that with that family sort of structure that we've got, it was so good that he came in, and it was, as you've both said, exactly what the club needed at that time, because everything, like Matt can say more than I can about behind the scenes, but with everything being so negative and having just dropped down the leagues like that, we needed something like that to give us that boost, and he was the man to come in and do it.
Right, he is the man to come in and do it. He's the man that we want to hear from. Now, there's plenty of different sort of clips of this interview. We're going to dip in and out of it over the course of the show. But the first one, obviously, Matt, you did the interview, but the question was something along the lines of what the first emotion was that comes when Chris Powell's asked to look back at it. So, you know, 5 years on, how does Chris Powell feel when he remembers that spectacular season?
Well, it's one of real pride and achievement for myself. Well, not only myself, but the whole staff and players and especially the supporters, because we achieved something that I was told, and you can maybe tell me this, but only three other managers apart from myself has won something for Charlton. So, you know, that in itself is something that will stick with me forever and be part of the club's history forever. And it's just the way we done it. Looking back, I think you're so immersed in it, week in, week out, day in, day out, that you kind of don't always look at and recognise exactly how well we did as a football club. You know, it was a rebuilding job on and off, and I mean off in capital letters. I mean, looking back, and you know, I can always tell you the statistics, most of them anyway. You know, 30 wins, 11 draws, 5 losses. I can rally off to you. 15 home wins, 15 away wins. You know, and if you really press me, I think I could tell you all the scores, all the scorers virtually, because it's just it was just something that, you know, we hoped for and we planned for. Perhaps, but actually executing it is a different matter. And those players, each and every one of them, did that. You know, and there were times where I suppose people doubted us a little bit, but we were top from September the 17th, and we never left there until the end of the season. And again, I know the date because it's my daughter's birthday, and I keep saying this, people laugh at me about dates. There's something about birthdays that connect me with Charlton. You know, we got promoted on my mum's birthday. We met up on my daughter's birthday. I played for England, my debut, when I was at Charlton, on my wife's birthday.
So there we go, Chris Pound. I mean, some people talk about how they might be superstitious and stuff, and obviously Chris finds that the dates have a special meaning for him. I mean, everyone now knows when it's the anniversary of the day at Carlisle, that's Chris Powell's mum's birthday. You always remember to try and wish Chris Powell's mum a happy birthday on that day, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, I should say that I did the interview when he was driving up to Derby to work for a Sky game. He was stuck on the North Circuit at the time, so we did it on his mobile over the phone, and the audio just cut out there. But he said that his birthday, September the 8th. He doesn't have a Charlton memory for September the 8th yet.
Yeah,
I think the key word there is yet.
So still hopefully a chance for him. Maybe that could be the day he comes back. Maybe if Carl sadly gets sacked or something along those lines at the start of next season for whatever reason.
You want him a bit earlier, I think, really.
Yeah. I mean, you talked about how much hard work you had to do in the course of that season. I mean, I get the sense of listening to this interview that there was a real sense of togetherness at the club, and you felt that no matter what your role was at the club, if you were a player, part of the coaching staff, the media team, or the tea lady, it felt like the way that Chris talks about it, it was just the effort of everyone that came together. And did it feel like that at the end of the season, that you'd played your part in this promotion?
Definitely do. I think you put your finger on it. I mean, one thing Chris encouraged was very much a team spirit throughout the club. You often get a situation at football clubs where the training ground is separated from the valley. That's happened, you know, over many years here at Charlton. When Chris Powell was in charge, that wasn't the case. You know, he made a real stride to bring the two sites closer together. He was regularly over at the valley. He brought players over to the valley to talk to staff. There was very much a feeling of we're all in it together. And he made real efforts. You know, the one thing he would do he would include you in decisions. He may not agree with you, but he made the time to listen to you. You know, whether it was me, whether it was one of his coaches, whether it was the tea lady, as you say, he gave them that time. And as I say, you might make a different decision than the one you want at the end, but you knew you would listen to.
We even heard that, obviously, I think this was after you'd left by then, but on the day that Chris Powell was relieved of his duties, you hear stories that he went round the training ground and made sure he said goodbye to everyone with the new manager already there. But that's for another day. Tom, I mean, the sense of togetherness wasn't just for people who worked within the club. I mean, as fans, you were part of that journey, weren't you?
Yeah, I never felt as connected to the club as then, and you know, I've said on this show before how you know, I didn't grow up around here. I'm first generation Charlton fan in my family, so it's not like I've got hundreds of friends that I came here to, you know, with week in, week out. And that season was the first season where really that all came together. And something I think I noticed more than ever, particularly through social media, was not just the club's relationship with fans through social media, but the players as well. They were so responsive, and as Matt says, there was just that feel that everyone was in it together, and players and fans were kind of, there was a proper relationship there. And obviously now you get players come out and they might have a photo with kids as they leave the ground or whatever, but it's not the same as that season in particular was. And it was just such a good bond, and everyone came together, and obviously it showed in the end in how we performed throughout the season. But yeah, it was just a really special time to be a Charlton fan.
And I just look, I mean, we've asked for the listeners' feelings on how, you know, on look, reminiscing what it was like that season. A great one from Dan Chee, which just summed it up really. Said it just reminded being proud to be a Charlton fan. Mm. And that season, I mean, that season, from a personal point of view, I remember I was going to sort of most away games at that point. But I remember the point in the season around Christmas where I said, right, from now on, I have to go to every game.
Mm.
And it's just because you were part and you were proud, and you know, if you look at the friendships you make in that season when the team's being successful. I remember I first started going hanging around with what we called the ROD on tour crew, like the Rose, that we used to go to the Rose of Denmark before, and these sort of things that they build, and they start in a season like that, in a great season like that, and they build forever. And even today, I went to watch one of them running in the marathon at the Rose of Denmark. I mean, that's the way that sort of stuff builds, really. And I guess, you know, there's going to be a lot of comparisons, I think, from that season to today, unfortunately. And that feeling now, where we are talking to the few friends that still come at the moment, they're saying they miss that sort of happiness around the club. And what goes on now, you know, a successful season like that is what you need to build those sort of friendships and stuff like that.
Yeah, and it's easy to forget that, you know, the season before, the 6 months when Powell took over, you know, how grim that was. Mm. I mean, at the end of 3 years of grimness, Phil Parkinson, you know, a bit unlucky to lose his job as the owners came in. You know, a thoroughly decent man and a decent coach, as he's gone on to prove in easier circumstances elsewhere. But then Powell just came in and transformed everything. It wasn't overnight, but... But ultimately, it was obviously for the better.
I guess we could have that conversation really about, because I remember thinking that Parky was unlucky to be sacked at the time. But in terms of, you know, as Chris talks about this, the downward spiral of the club were on, even though we'd had a decent season, got into the playoffs under Parky, the second half of the season, we were still, what, fifth or sixth when he got sacked. But if a mentality thing, you know, you feel like we were plodding along, not playing the greatest of football, getting where we need to. The way that when Chris Powell came in, obviously it did go massively downhill that season. I think we finished 13th. But just having a hero like that, and we laud him probably even too much on this show, but, you know, having someone like that to look up to, it just brings a whole new feeling to the club. And that's what, you know, whereas Parky was probably unlucky to lose his job, it just completely changed the mentality of the fan base, because they had, again, someone to hero worship, which we hadn't had for a while.
And it gave him a clean slate as well. He could come in and, with the new owners, obviously Peter Varney playing an influential role as well, he had both the ability and was given the capacity to make changes and completely shake things up.
Mm. Right, we just had a tweet in from Terry Smith, who's having a well-earned rest today after driving all the way to Chesterfield and back yesterday. He says, Chris Powell at the club was so much more than that, just that promotion season. We all believed and would have followed him absolutely anywhere. Now, this is what we're about, the second part of the interview is about rebuilding the squad. Now, this is something that's going to have to happen this summer. And something that's happened every 6 months or so over the last few years because of the amount of loanees and players that come and go. But the way you have to rebuild a team is, especially if you're going to go from, you want to do it as early as possible. You want to make sure you're getting the right characters in. So obviously Chris Powell did a phenomenal job really of that at the start of the 11-12 season. And now, Matt, you asked Chris Powell when he had to start thinking about the rebuild of the squad. And this is what he had to say.
It started during that season. I tell you when it really, really had to sort of come to fruition was after we played Dagenham and Woodbridge. Because I'd never seen Charlton fans like that in my lifetime. You know, we had some down times when I was a player, but we had more good times, and whenever we had a rally round one another, and the club always came together, but Dagenham and walking towards the fans down that tunnel, and the abuse we got, you know, and I almost shy away from it, you know, I'm not going to pinpoint anyone, you know, I think we kind of, I think it was that sort of severe moment where everyone went, well, how low can we get? And that's not just Dagenham, the flag went on the day and earned the right to beat us 2-1. But that was it. That was a moment I remember getting on the coach and being sort of really not alone, because I've always had good staff in Alex and Damien and Ben and, you know, Phil Chappell and Errol at the time, but we needed to change. And I just said, you know, we need to change everything and we need to do it as soon as we can. And we need to just get through to the end of the season and really make some big decisions, some harsh decisions. You know, someone like Jose Semedo was player of the year and a real likeable guy, but I just felt we needed to be fair to him and be fair to us. We needed to move on and create a new team. Create a new squad and a new feeling. So after Dagenham, it was Phil, chief scout at the time, and I spoke to Pete Varney and Steve Kavanagh and said, look, we need to come together and make a real change and have some players that just haven't been affected by all what's gone on. Because quite clearly, everyone's been affected. And I don't want new players mixing in with old players that are affected by it. I just want the fans to kind of say, okay, that part of our history is gone. Let's move on and see if we can create new heroes, a new feeling, a new team, and, you know, hopefully some real sort of passion and history that everyone would be proud of. And, you know, we did that. So we started looking at what players we could get in on clever free transfers. Selling Carl Jenkinson was an added bonus. I managed to use the money to buy Royce Wiggins and Dale Stevens and Danny Green. There was a little bit left over, just some real small fees for Michael Morrison and Ben Hamer. And then we brought in some good frees. Matt Taylor came in, Danny Hollands on a free. And obviously we utilised what players were there, Johnny Jackson, Scott Wagstaff, and Chris Solly. So all of a sudden, you know, we started to build a team and a squad that really didn't have any attachment to what had gone on before. And all they saw was Charlton Athletic, a well-supported club, a fantastic stadium, good infrastructure, that used to be in the Premier League, now in League One, but wanted to get back there. They all bought into it. So that was sort of my USP with a lot of the players whenever I met them. And I met them, you know, during the course of the tail end of that season, and obviously throughout my summer, I grabbed a holiday, but I was on the phone all the time, and I remember meeting Tony on my holiday as well. And that's what we had to do. You know, straight away we knew that the two Sheffield clubs would have bigger budgets and would have squads that were used to League One. We knew Preston and Huddersfield would have budgets bigger than us. So we knew we had to be a bit creative. Rely on a few younger players like Chris, like Scott, and marry that with some good experience at the level and some clever, astute buys that would also gain in value, like a Wiggins, like a Steve. So that was the way we went about it, and what system we would play and get players to into what we were going to do that season.
Was there a conscious decision to bring in leaders?
Yeah, well, there definitely was, because if you remember, Semedo was captain, and he was, again, more a leader by example. Michael Morris and I played alongside and always felt he had leadership qualities, even from when he was playing at Leicester when he joined from Cambridge. One player you didn't mention there, Matt Taylor, was next, you know. Danny Holland had been captain, but he was a bit quieter than what we thought. But there were players we felt could grow. Chris Solly, leader by example. Jan Kermagat, when he came in, leader by example. Brad was a leader by example with Dale. I thought had qualities that he could possibly be a captain. So our spine was good with potential leaders. Obviously, I had a decision to make with regard to Matt Taylor or Jacko. I think during the course of the pre-season, I'm sure some eagle-eyed fans will remember, I made different player captain for all the games during pre-season. So I had Jacko captain, I had Danny Holland as captain, I had Matt Taylor as captain. I think I gave Chris Solly the armband for pre-season game. It's just so I didn't want pressure on anyone, I wanted to get to know them. And in the end there were two outstanding candidates at that time in Jacko and Matt Taylor. And I suppose the rest is history. Jacko in the end, because I just felt he would relate more to the fans and it would just take a bit of pressure away from Matt Taylor, who was a new player. And they were a bunch that almost managed themselves. Of course, I had to reel them in a few times, as you do, and listen, that they really bought into it. And, you know, I'd be amazed if I get another group like that in my managerial
life. So there you go, Chris Powell. Talking about the group of players and just the way you ended there, like saying he'd be amazed if he gets another group like that. I mean, you asked him there, when they were looking to rebuild the squad, were they thinking about bringing in leaders and that those sort of characters are so important, I guess. And he reeled off a few names there, but you did feel there were so many leaders in that squad, and such a good mentality that you felt even when the chips were down. For example, the one home game I missed that season, I think, was the Notts County game when we were 4-0 down at half time. Any other team could have crumbled under a game like that.
Yeah, I mean, that game comes up in our chat later as one of the sort of the main obstacles that the team faced that year. Chris, I think, just calls it horrendous. You know, we 4-0 down because we lost the previous game as well.
Colchester, wasn't it?
Against Colchester, and not to preempt it. But you know, we 4-0 down at half time. We came out. We won that second half 2-0. So we still lost 4-2, but it was still a much improved half that gave you some hope that things would be better the following week and so on. So you could come away with a lot more positivity.
As we said, sort of just before we went into that, you know, the rebuild of the team that we're going to have to do this summer, and when you compare it to what we did that summer, I've counted it out. I mean, we must have had 10 or 11 signings in before pre-season started that year, which is just incredible.
I can give you the precise stats if you want, Louis. Yeah. We had 9 signings completed before pre-season started. The first two were Hollands and Pritchard. Then we had an agreement for Nick Pope. Paul Hayes actually was signed up well before it was actually announced. We actually did an interview with him and we had him all more or less signed up, but we couldn't actually announce it for a good while. Royce Wiggins, Dale Stevens, the oft forgotten Mikel Alonso, Neil Sullivan and Danny Green were all signed before pre-season even started, before the players reported back. So that was 9, and then 15 players were signed before the start of the season.
Yeah, and to have that whole pre-season together, I guess, is how you would look to build a team, basically. You know each other's games. I mean, we talk about the characters as well. I mean, again, for you, this one, Matt, because you were part of the club, you know what the feeling was around the training ground, because obviously as fans we come and watch 90 minutes on a Saturday. We don't tend to see too much of what goes on behind the scenes, and so camaraderie was that quite clear at that time.
Yeah, there was a lot of camaraderie, and I think that as well came from Powell's realization that wasn't present in the squad the previous year. It was very much a team of players chucked together with whatever finance could be provided. And then Phil Parkinson sort of did what he could. This squad was built with a single purpose in mind. It was constructed to fit a formation, to fit a structure with the right types of people. Powell and Varney have talked long and hard about how they investigated players' characters. They knew everything about player before they signed him. They spoke to them, they met them, spoke about their families, and that sort of thing. So everything was in place with just one aim, which was promotion.
Interesting that you mentioned that the team was, the players were brought in to build up a certain formation, because now we know this summer Carl Robinson's got his favourite formation, the 4-2-3-1. He's talked about, you know, we've asked him loads of times over the last few weeks about are you going to be allowed to build your team in your image effectively. Now, if you look at last season, you know, we all felt really confident when all of a sudden we had, was it a Jose, we had Novak and we had Ricky Holmes, who between them had scored 49 goals in this league and the league below last season. You thought, well, here we go. Here's some foundations, but it was never built upon. Now, again, we're going to compare it to this year. Is Carl going to be given the resources to do what he needs to do this year to have any chance of doing what Powell... I mean, what Powell did in that season was unbelievable, because to get a team, a brand new team, to play from the very first day, that 3-0 win against Bournemouth, to get him playing the way you want to is one hell of a task, and Carl Robinson's got one hell of a job on his hands to try and repeat that, hasn't he?
I think I'd be shocked if we managed to start the season like that, even if he's given as much money as he wants and gets every player in that he wants, just because I think that was just so special what happened. But I think there's a couple of points there, and the main one is making sure that he knows that formation, as you say, and it's being able to bring the players in to suit that formation, because that was what was so important under Powell. But I also think, you look at, yes, we brought in Novak and a Jose and Holmes, but they're almost like Football Manager type signings. You know, they'd all done well the season before, so anyone could see that those players were able to be bought. But was there that background check? Was there those talks with those players? Did we know if those players could work together? Or did we look at the players that had done well and think, right, we'll cherry pick him and him, without any real idea of the system that was going to be played? Because they came in late, because it was a new manager again, there was so much change. Whereas, as Matt says, Powell, you know, we've talked again and again about, they don't meet with the players now by the sound of things. They go on stats alone. And that's the big difference between the squads now. That unity doesn't seem there, and that dedication to the club. And that really came through under Powell's side, and you just don't see that in a side at the moment.
I mean, that was one of the big problems last season. Well, yeah. One of the many big problems last season. we could have a whole hour and a half talking about the problems we had last season. But the rifts in the dressing room was something. I mean, that 5-0 defeat at Huddersfield, I'll never forget the way that Reza Guchanajac got sent off in that game. Because, you know, I mean, it was a joke. It seemed to me, and I'm not going to... You know, I'm going to allege this, but, you know, it felt like he got himself sent off on purpose. And that's what then caused we all heard about the rift in the dressing room after, and there were some big characters who were involved in that, some big characters who were on our side, I'd call it that way, one of whom came out to speak to us after the game when Carol Fry didn't fancy it. I mean, you see that last year, and Chris Solly mentioned it when we spoke to him at the Player of the Year dinner last year, talk about the characters you need in the squad, and I think, to be fair to Russell Slade, I think he knew that this season when he talked about having to rebuild the mentality of the team. And you know, obviously he got sacked, but that's what's going to have to happen again.
And not only did he get sacked, but during the summer he clearly wasn't given enough of a chance, because he brought those three or four players in, and then, as you say, nothing else happened, and we needed to build on that. And it's the same talking into the future now. It's the same with this summer. We're going to have loanees going back. We need 8 or 9 signings at the least. But instead, what we've said time and time again is, we might get 7 or 8 in, but 7 or 8 go. And so it's a complete rebuild time and time again. And we need a full squad next year, and we need a squad that's unified under one manager. And that's that consistency, and that's the best chance we've got. And will it happen for him? I don't know.
The other key thing that Powell had was that the majority of players were out of contract at the end of that season, so they could be offloaded quite or reasonably easily. You know, now we've got, you know, Naby Sarr for another 2 years on whatever he's earning a week. There are players earning big salaries that we just can't get rid of, and as we've learned the lessons before with Reza, and Vetticheli and so on. You know, so Carl Robinson may talk about how he's got a great budget and so on, but that budget includes all these players. Unless we can get rid of them, who's frankly going to want to take them?
Well, that's probably the point that, I mean, fans remember at the start of this season, there was a defender who wasn't getting many games. He's only started getting George Teixeira, and now Russell Slade had, certainly had his reasons for not wanting to play him. Now, Carl gave him a clean slate. But, you know, the amount of money that he's supposedly on, which we all know is going to be a hot, and for his age, and the length of his contract, I mean, that's not maybe not the sort of player that you need or the sort of character. I mean, you know, you can argue about his performances since he's come back in. He hasn't been awful. He hasn't been spectacular either. But that's the sort of thing we're talking about. And that's we've asked for fans to send us in with some memories. And, Tony, you've been looking at the Twitter. I mean, there's plenty of stuff that's come in. Have you got a couple to pick out?
I was going
to
say, yeah, we'd be here all night if we did them all. But Marion says she remembers using the points total in class for maths puzzles. so every child knew every week how Charlton were doing, which I quite liked.
Be a lot easier maths if they had to do it this season. Yeah. We're on 10 points. Point, yeah.
Billy Hendricks has one that I can relate to, which was having Charlton in his accumulator every week and actually being let down by a different team instead.
Not the case this year, I'm sure.
Dan Sheed says, very importantly, just being proud to be a Charlton fan, which I think we've mentioned, but also as a specific memory was Wagstaff scoring that volley against Bournemouth in the first match of the season.
Mm. It's worth reflecting on that Bournemouth game because, I mean, I don't know if you remember, but Chris Powell was suspended for that game.
That a hangover from the Bristol Rovers game?
Yeah, exactly. Right. He had a two-game suspension, so due to the London riots, the Reading game, the Cup game was postponed, so he missed the first two games. Yeah, you know, we still absolutely smashed Bournemouth in that first game, and from there we were off and running. Yeah,
I think I actually told a lie there because I remembered I didn't get to that Bournemouth game either because I was on holiday, so I missed two games that season. So very, very contrasting games. Anymore?
Talia says the day at Carlisle, free kicks from Skip, which I'm sure we'll talk about. Chris Powell crying, top from September the 17th, and ending Huddersfield's run, which is another one. I remember.
there's so many good stories that come out of that season. You forget that we ended Huddersfield's 50-year unbeaten run, and you know that. I mean, that game in particular. We're about to come on to the most important games of that season, which I think is up next. Or is that the? I know we've got Jan replacing Hayes, which is another thing that was quite important. But in terms of thinking about actual games, you know, how good it felt to... I mean, that's when we stamp our authority on League One. You know, Huddersfield are this team that everyone knows about their 43-game unbeaten run or something along those lines. And they came to the Valley and they didn't have a kick. And we beat them quite comfortably 2-0 on Sky TV, which we know is actually impossible to win a game on Sky TV as well. So just one of the very good memories. Right, let's hear, I mean, because there was an important decision that Chris Powell had to make early on in that season, because we started the start of that season, it was Bradley Wright Phillips and Paul Hayes who'd actually had a nice little partnership going, and then a certain Frenchman became available, and Chris had a decision to make. So let's find out how difficult it was for Chris Powell to make that decision.
It was a hard one because actually Paul came in and was a clever player. I mean, he's still playing now, which is credit to him, but he played well. I could see he was a decent partner, a really good partner for Brad, because he was very unselfish. He was always looking to drop deep and link the play, which in the system we played was good. But I always felt we just missed something from the team. And you're forever looking to improve the team. You're forever looking to make the team better. And, you know, I liked Paul. He was a likable member of the group. And that harmony in the group was fostered from pre-season. You know, we went out to Lepe and, you know, we had a couple of incidents which we look back and laugh on now, but actually they were sort of the making of the group. You know, I think it was a test for me as a young manager, new manager. And, you know, you always get it where players might test you and might do things you don't want. And it's how you react and how you manage that is always crucial, because players are always looking at you, they're always thinking, you know, how is the manager going to react to this? And I've been a player, so I know exactly what players are looking for. And, you know, looking back, I managed it well alongside the staff, and I think the players, they knew exactly what I wanted, what I was looking for, and, I think it was the making of us, and then, you know, we started off the season brilliantly, and it went on from there. You know, we didn't lose for, I think it was, the first 11 games?
Yes, 7 wins in the first 9, yeah.
Yeah, the harmony grew from there. The players knew there was a line, but they knew also that I was with them, and I was backing them, and they were new players, they were bedding in, but, you know, I wasn't lying to them. they knew exactly what I said to them, you know, many of the new players was true. We were going for it. There was no quarter given, you know. I wanted them to lead. I wanted them to have a feeling for the team and for each other, because that's what I always felt the club and the team was built on when I was a player. So I wanted that back, and I wanted them to maintain that. And moving a key player, and Hazy was and showed he was a key player at the beginning. It was delicate, you know. It was delicate because I knew he was a popular player, and I knew Jan from his experience at Leicester. It wasn't great. You know, everyone knew about his missed penalty against Cardiff. The fans didn't want him to wear a Leicester shirt again. He was basically banished. But I got to know Jan really well as a young coach. He wasn't fitting in. He didn't really settle in the Leicester area. So when I it was a chance phone call. I was trying to look at different players to come in and add to the strike force we had at the time. And I just said, listen, I've got a player who, if he shows any qualities that he showed on the training field and on the odd occasion on the pitch for Leicester, then I said, we've got a player who can play at this level, but I'm going to have to be quick. You're going to have to trust me. I'm going to have to sell it to him. So I rung Jan myself, and he was on the verge of going back to France. But I just said to him, look, you'll love London. You'll love the club. You can make yourself a hero, and it'll just be good for your own self-esteem. You know, you're a player that can play in this country. I mean, he's proven it since that he's been, you know, Bournemouth and now to Reading, and he's been promoted with Bournemouth and got promoted with us. And, you know, he's in a playoff basis with Reading. He's tailor-made for English football. So I just said to him, you know, buy in, but mix in. You know, I remember I said to him, you didn't really mix in with the squad at Leicester. I said, but do it for me here. If you do it, the players will love you, the crowd will love you, and more importantly, you know, I see you scoring goals and showing and proving a lot of people wrong. He was a bit unsure, but he got to trust me at the time, together at Leicester. I suppose the rest is history. He came in, I was very sort of, I didn't put him straight in the team. I made him sub just to show that he had to buy in to what we were doing. And of course, even when he was sub and coming on as sub, he contributed. I think he contributed against Chesterfield, and then he came on against Sheffield United to score with his first touch. And all of a sudden, people were seeing, you know, the players were seeing his quality in the air, on the ground, with free kicks, that this was a player who could only do one thing, and that was add to what we already had. And, you know, I had to be delicate with it, because Hazy contributed. He certainly did. And he played a real crucial part in getting us going at the start, and getting Brad going with scoring goals, and getting the team going. You know, I remember he contributed quite a lot, and I'll always be grateful to him for that. But of course, as a manager, you have to move on and progress, and that's what we certainly did with Brad and Jan.
There you go. Obviously, a difficult decision to make, but you know, that's the way it goes in football. Sometimes you have to be ruthless, and Paul Hayes dropped out, but I mean, Jan coming in. Jan was so important in that season. Finished in the league second joint top scorer with Jacko, obviously behind Wright Phillips. I mean, Jacko actually got one in the cup as well, which edged him ahead, which I'm sure Jacko probably would have reminded Jan of at the time. But firstly on Jan, I mean, what an important character he was in that season.
Yeah, and we were just saying off air then, I remember when he first came in and Hayes was getting dropped, and I was gutted, because Hayes and Wright Phillips had, as we've said, had that partnership, and he was vital, I thought, for Wright Phillips to get all those goals. And I knew very little about Kermigan. And then he got those quick-fire goals. He got that goal, I think, against MK. And then, as Powell said there, he scores with his first touch against Sheffield United. And I was like, oh, hello, who's this? and quickly just became a fan's favourite because he left everything on the pitch. Every single game he came off and you knew he had nothing left to give. And again, I don't want to sort of bring us down by comparing too much this season or any season since then, but I don't know how often we could say that about players these days. And he was just, you could just tell everybody seemed to love him. Obviously, I wasn't there. Matt can maybe say a bit more about what he was like as a character behind the scenes, but just on the pitch, he was such an easy player to enjoy and to appreciate as a fan.
Yeah, good email from Vic. Said, I'd have Chris back tomorrow, but not under this regime. Our club's been destroyed. We want our Charlton back. Now, when you're dropping a player that's played a very important part at the start of the season in Paul Hayes, and there's others that throughout the season would have who would have played a lot of games then got dropped. Now, the way you manage that is so important, because if you drop a player who's been important and all of a sudden they're unhappy and they're talking in the dressing room about how they're not happy and they're dragging others down, then that can have a massive effect. So the way that Chris had to manage that well, clearly went quite well because we won with 101 points. you got the impression that Paul was unhappy or did that
yeah,
happy?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's one of the key achievements of Powell's regime is that the players that had every right to be dissatisfied from being out of the team, such as Paul Hayes when Yang came in, such as Matt Taylor even for the last sort of 10-15 games of the season when Liam Court replaced him, both players barely kicked a ball after that for Charlton and left at the end of the season, yet they left singing Powell's praises because of the way they'd been involved in the season, the way he'd kept them involved in the squad, how he'd explained his thinking to them. It was a real achievement, I think.
Yeah, we're getting a couple of tweets in from Peter Finch, who we all remember used to be here, and he says he remembers Matt handing us the Yan signing press release, looked at it and thought, who on earth is this? And then I googled him and watched his penalty, thought we'd signed a wrong, and little did I know. I mean, well, there probably was a lot of that when he came in, actually.
Yeah, I mean, even from our side of side of things, I mean, we wrote that press release, we barely heard of him, you know, Championship and Leicester's promotion campaign playoff failure wasn't really, you know, registering with us in our mire the previous season. So yeah, that was all very much out of the blue, frantically chasing around. Oh look, he's done this penalty. let's try and gloss over that in the press release. Yeah.
It's fair to say that Leicester, of course, has never recovered from that. As fans, we all have our favourite games in that season. I mean, if you had to be put on the spot, I mean, important away wins for me personally, it was a away game at Oldham where I remember I think there was train problems, so we all went up on the coach and it was difficult to get up there. And then I think it was Trevor Kettle was the ref that day, and we were down to, I think Danny Hollands was the first one sent off, if I remember rightly. Then it was 10-all. Then
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I think we took the lead just after half time with Jan Kermigan header, and then we went down to nine men when Scott Wagstaff was sent off for slipping over, and then there was this crazy last 20 minutes where we were bombarded, and I remember Leon Court winning every single header, but it was just the character we showed to win that game. I mean, that was the day that I thought, oh, we're winning this league.
Terrible pitch as well. I don't remember it had been snowing the week previously, and it was just an awful, awful pitch.
Yeah, because the pitch at Oldham hasn't got any better from when we went up there on Valentine's Day this year. It was just as bad. But I mean, obviously, Chris Powell would have picked his favourite games from that season. We want to know what yours are as well. Don't forget to keep your tweets coming in. We've got hundreds of tweets coming in and messages on the Charlton Life forum. We've only got the one email, so it's not starting to worry if the emails are down. But there's plenty of ways you can get in contact with us. So tweet us at Charlton Life, email studio@charltonlife.co.uk. Head over to Charlton Life message board, where there's a few messages on there already. already, but we want to know what your most important games were of that season, and this is what Chris Powell had to say when he was asked that question.
Yeah, I mean, everyone talks about the Sheffield, and rightly so. I mean, that was basically Jacko's week, Sheffield Wednesday away, Sheffield United at home. I think that really put so much belief in the brains of everyone, players and fans alike. So I think that was crucial. I think even, you know, going away and winning at Hartlepool, that was a three-game week. Those sort of weeks really propel you or can make you have a downward turn when you have three-game weeks.
Mm.
You know, getting 9 points is utopia. Getting 7 is good. Getting 6, okay, sometimes you can say that. It's a difficult game that you've lost. But anything less than that, you tend to think, well, okay, that's not great. But to get 9 and going all that way was massive for us. I think, you know, beating Preston 5-2.
Yeah, that was the game after Hartlepool.
Yeah, you know, all of a sudden, scoring goals, we showed people that we mean business. And remember, this is a new group that hadn't really, you know, most people say they have to, they need weeks, months to bed together and get to know one another. But they just clicked straight away. They got to understand what I was. And they done it. We kept it very simple. And if we had any setbacks, we would quickly do our best to rectify them as a group. You know, those results, I think, will always give any team, new or old, belief in what they're doing. And, we just went on from there and, you know, winning sort of in the last minute away at Yeovil. On Boxing Day, they're just big moments. And then I think whenever we had a setback, we tended to bounce back straight away with either a draw or a win. So after Stevenage, you know, we got a positive result. I can't remember who it was, but I remember, you know, we lost to Orient. We went down to 10 men, then got sent off early on. And got a result 2 days later. And I think a real test for us was when we lost to Colchester and Notts County. Yeah, the Notts County result, I mean, no one saw that coming at all. That was a bit of a test, and we drew up at Scunthorpe
yep.
the next game, which was important. I didn't want 3 in a row. 2 in a row, and they were both at home, which was a disappointment. But, you know, the players rallied round one another and handled the pressure. We were top, we were there to be shot at. So we got back and went on from there. But I think winning at Oldham, I think was the one for me. I know it was close then, we were close to sort of the results, what we wanted. But winning at Oldham with, if we go down to 9 and they went down to 10, was, I mean, that was just huge. That just showed me then that this group could actually do anything. They were committed. They, whatever was put in front of them, they were knocking it down, and they were knocking it down together. Whether it was 11, 10, or in that case 9, that moment then just said to me on that drive home, you know, this group will stop at nothing. They want this trophy. They want this promotion. They want it on their CVs.
There you go. So many good memories of specific games there. I mean, I mentioned the Oldham one. I mean, you got a favourite one, Matt?
Well, the Oldham one for me as well. So, I mean, I wasn't planning to go to that game. My wife's from Wigan, and it was at Easter weekend, so I went up to Wigan to see relatives for Easter. And then I made a late decision on the day that I'd go and join Gary Haynes and help him out on the day. And as we've just been talking about, Chris, just been talking about, you know, it was just an amazing game. And you came away at the end of that game. I was lucky enough to be around the changing room afterwards and sorting all the media interviews out. and everything, and you know, the euphoria and the belief after that game was as Chris describes, you know, it was just certain we were going to win the league from there.
And in terms of important games, you mentioned there about our first defeat of the season came away at Stevenage, where a game where I remember we conceded a ridiculous deflected goal, and then I think we were very angry with the ref by then. It's one of those ones where you come out of it feeling you've been robbed, and again, that's one of the ones that can derail a season. It can that knock to your confidence. But he talked about, he said he couldn't remember what the next game was, but it was a 4-0 home win against Carlisle. I mean, these are the things where he talks about the character, and at the end he was talking about another game there where he knew that, I think it was the Oldham one he was talking about, he knew that those players wanted that trophy. But the way you react to hardship, and that's something that, I mean, particularly, I remember last season, the way we reacted to conceding a goal last season was to go on and concede two more within 10 minutes. I mean, what did you think it was, Chris, the mentality that Chris had, the type of characters he brought into the squad, that they'd be so good at bouncing back to, you know, when they took one on the chin?
Yeah, it's difficult to say. I mean, it's all about the manager. It's, I mean, Kerbs used to do it very well in... just go back to basics, you know, don't worry about the opposition, play 4-4-2, be quite narrow, be defensively minded, just be absolutely solid. You know, we're not going to get beaten, or we're not going to concede a goal in the first half. And just make sure that, you know, one loss doesn't turn into two losses, into three losses. You know, just getting back on track as quickly as possible.
And did you have a favourite, Tom, yourself?
As I said off air, there wasn't too many I was able to attend because I was working Saturdays that season, but one that was mentioned actually by someone on Twitter, which I'd probably agree with, was the Fulham away in the FA Cup, because obviously we got thumped, but I thought we played really well that game, and that unity then between the Charlton fans and the noise we made and the chanting about the fact we were winning the league, I thought that was great fun. And it sounds a bit cheesy, but that first game of the season, when I turned up and there were all these players I'd never really heard of, because I'd obviously kept an eye on the site through the summer and seen the signings, but I didn't know who a lot of them were, and it just seemed so easy compared to the past two or three seasons. I was talking to you guys about when we played Notts County away the season before and limped to a defeat, and it just seemed like these players were, it was so comfortable for them, and they just all came together. We scored some good quality goals in that game, and I just thought, we're going to have a real good go this season, and you could see it straight away.
We asked for everyone else's favourite games. We'll come on to the tweets in a minute. I just noticed there's a conversation going on between Pete Finch and Norman talking about a meat shop in Hartlepool. I don't want to know what that means. But another one here. I mean, like I say, you forget games. I mean, Sheffield Wednesday away, when Jacko scored that free kick and then repeated the trick the next week, just as my dad said, there's no way he's going to do it 2 weeks in a row. But that's Sheffield Wednesday away. I mean, so we went to both our title rivals that season, both the Sheffield teams, and we beat them. And that sort of big win away from home was something that, as a Charlton fan, I wasn't really used to in a season like that. And I remember the celebrations at the end of that game were something very special, weren't they?
There was loads of train travel problems as well, wasn't there, on the way to that Sheffield Wednesday game. So yeah, loads of fans turned up late and... obviously got to enjoy themselves a lot afterwards.
Yeah, I remember actually, luckily I drove out that game. I remember, funnily enough, this is more of a personal story, but driving through Shortlands and seeing a fella I recognised heading towards the train station, I was like, I know that guy from somewhere. And getting up to the pub here, and that same fella was on my table at the pub, and it turned out to be Ollie Groom, and so I met Ollie that day. That's probably how, sort of, the stepping stone for how I got onto this show, really. But again, that's the story of meeting friends in a special season. Have you got any other tweets of what people have shared as favourites?
Yeah, so I think what started that conversation between Pete and Norman, because he says favourite away game was Hartlepool, and a thumping 4-0 win, and he mentions him there. At home, beating Huddersfield to ruin their run. Reese mentioned the 4-0 at Fulham, and the atmosphere was brilliant. Garmy Head Chef says too many memories of that season, but the massive fans each week telling us we were going to muck it up and they would win.
Yeah, well, our own fans saying, oh, you've got to be careful, Sheffield United are going to come good. It's only taken them 6 years, but they've finally done it now, haven't they?
And then Freddie Saunders agrees with Reese and says the Valley Floyd Road singing in that away end was insane. Peter O'Sullivan, great memories of that season, but always remember the Danny Holland's diving header versus Preston. And a good performance all round.
4-0 up at half time in that game.
So yeah, that's it for now, I think. But as you say, just so many games that people can pick out, and if you try and do that on other seasons, like Cardiff 5-4 springs to mind in recent seasons, but there aren't many others over recent years that you would pinpoint, and that season we can pick 4 or 5 comfortably. Yeah.
The Huddersfield home game was quite good fun, because obviously Sky were there to cover it, And everything was about Huddersfield. Yeah. You know, the number of interviews that were going on with Huddersfield players, managers, all the coverage was about Huddersfield. I think it was Daryl. Was it Daryl Russell who got the goal that day?
Yeah, Jan got one as well. Was it Hogan?
Hogan Ephraim. Yeah. Sorry, Hogan Ephraim. Yes, of course it was. Yeah.
Players. See, these are players you can easily forget. But
until I watched the DVD the other week,
there's an Unsung Heroes, which is coming up in a couple of clips time, which we can talk about then. Now, there's something I was thinking about today, actually, which I'll ask you at some point, so we might as well do it now. Now, I remember at the start of that season, you know, you obviously met on doing the Charlton Twitter and that sort of stuff, but there was a hashtag that Charlton fans were using, which I'm thinking there's no way you would have used this during the season. That was Champions Come May. If I remember rightly. Now, so Charlton fans started using that very early in that season. I'm guessing that you must have been very careful not to use that.
I don't remember that, to be honest.
Not at all.
No.
We were using it all season on Twitter. Right. Yeah.
No, I don't remember that. I remember, obviously, before the start of the season, 442 magazine predicted that we finish 18th at the end of the season. They very sort of kindly, their editor, bought one of our things on eBay that we put up as a joke.
Maybe they're looking 5 years into the future.
Racing Posts predicted that we'd win it, I remember. So kudos to them.
Right, now this clip is interesting because it's about a player that I'm guessing, I mean, to be honest, until I heard this clip during the week, I completely forgot he ever played for us. Now, this is Leon Clark. Now, this is someone who came in during the season. A swap deal for Paul Benson, is that correct? Was it
That's
swap
correct,
and money
yeah.
or just
and
a straight
and
swap?
A bit of cash as well, yes.
So we paid extra.
We paid.
I was going to say, yeah, because that would have been a very unfair swap otherwise. I liked Benno, but he's not quite that level. But let's hear about how he came in, because the way he came in was obviously quite interesting. So let's hear what Chris Power had to say about Leon Clark coming in.
Yeah, I mean, Leon Clark, you know, Tony Jimenez at the time felt he was scoring loads of goals, which he was, and we had Paul Benson, who was a likeable part of the group. I think the fans quite liked Ben.
Yeah.
He was a goal scorer, always a goal scorer, and nicked a few goals, but, you know, he wasn't playing, and Tony just said to me, well, you know, they want Benson, why don't we take Clark? And I said, well, I know about Leon and the troubles he's been having at Swindon. I remember saying to him, I've got Kermagant and Wright Phillips, who are my first choice, and they're flying. They've got a good thing going on. They're flying. You're going to have to bide your time. You're really going to have to bide your time, because they are the first choice. It's very rare a manager says that. Because normally you just say, well, if you have a shirt, you get in. I said to him, bide your time and fit in, but be patient. I've told you this, so, you know, if you get a bit upset, if you get a bit frustrated, remember I told you. So I was upfront. but, of course, Jan and Brad just went from strength to strength and kept scoring goals and creating goals. Jacko was scoring goals, and so was Danny Holland. You know, they were all playing their part, the lads. And that was tough. You know, I had Jason Yule as well, you know, who's obviously part of the club at the minute. He, again, was just that experienced one that wanted in and around sort of the group. He knew he wouldn't play, but he contributed. That was tough, you know, but in the end, Leon, you know, he didn't like it. So in the end, you know, like I was always fair with a lot of players. Okay, fair enough. You know, if I can get you playing somewhere, I will, and I'll bring in someone else.
So there you go, that's Chris Powell talking about Leon Clark. Now, a player that most of us will probably forgot, and like I say, I completely forgot he actually played for us until we were going through this interview, the clips during the week. But is it the way he came to us, obviously quite interesting. He just had a falling out with Paolo Di Canio at Swindon, which I think involved a boot and a backside. But the fact that he ended up with us along, and you said there were some similarities with the way that Mikko Alonso ended up with us as well.
Yeah, I mean, the main reason I asked Chris about this was I was interested in the parallels between, obviously, the episode under Roland de Châtelet. in terms of his squad being built for him. So that season, Powell had a budget at the start of the season, and then Tony Jimenez wanted to sign Mikel Alonso. Powell said, you know, he doesn't fit into my plans, into my structure. Tony Jimenez says, well, I'm signing him anyway, so you've got him. And Powell said, well, as long as he doesn't come into my budget, you know, he's extra, then that's fine. And the difference being, in both the case of Leon Clark and Alonso, Leon Clark was Jimenez saying, we've got Benson, Clark scoring goals is probably worth more, why don't we get him in? And then he'll be worth more money in the long run. The case with both of those is that, yes, Powell lost control in those transfer dealings, but he retained the control of who he could select for his team and his squad. And obviously, you know, neither player featured much because they didn't fit into his plans. Under Mr. De Châtelet, obviously the pressure was much more significant. So yeah, that was sort of why I asked, went down that line.
Yeah, and I guess you know, in terms of that was obviously one of the main problems we had under Du Châtelet when Powell was here, that he didn't feel like he could pick his own team, and you know, that affects team morale so much. But I mean, we've talked about a wonderful result at Sheffield United. There's a terrible result we had at Sheffield United in the Cup quarter final, where, you know, emails that have since leaked have shown that there was obviously some discord between the owner and the manager at that point over who was supposed to be playing, particularly in goal. And we saw how that affected the team that day.
Yeah, and you know, it continues. If players know the manager isn't in charge, I mean, Powell referenced it earlier in one of the interview excerpts. You know, players take liberties. You know, the manager has to instill that discipline. The players have to know where the line is. You know, and this isn't something that just happens at Charlton. You know, owners are difficult the country and the world over. I know another owner who, where the team loses on a Saturday, he's there at the training ground Monday morning, 8 o'clock, with all his stats about who's been taking corners and who shouldn't be taking corners, mm-hmm. and so on. But it's all about, you know, what can the manager retain the respect of the players? How can he manage those players and the squad and keep everyone going in the same direction?
Yeah, and obviously that's a problem we've had recently, unfortunately. Now, obviously, in any promotion season, there's always going to be the standout players who you love and you hoist up on your shoulders at the end of the season. You go look at your Yans and your Jackos and your Wright Phillips, who scored so many goals that season. I think Wright Phillips might even go down as slightly being forgotten by Charlton fans, actually. Yeah. There's also always going to be people doing the dirty work. Now, you know, Radoslav Kishishev in the Premier League was my favourite dirty player, as I'd call him like that. And when he came in here a few months ago, I was shaking like a schoolgirl at some sort of like...
I was going to say, careful.
Yeah, at the Wanted concert or something like that. But there's always players who do the dirty work behind the scenes, and obviously managers are going to have their favourites. You guys probably have your favourites as well, so let us know who you think the unsung heroes were from that campaign. I've just tweeted out a picture of Bradley Pritchard, for example. Mm. But this is what Chris Powell said.
Matt Taylor, I think sometimes, because Leon Cork came in, and obviously, of course, he had, you know, Premier League experience. But Matt Taylor was really understated. He really was. You know, someone like him, who, towards the end of it, wasn't playing as much as he was in the first half, but he was still there, still playing, and still being part of the group. Lads like that, you have to keep going. Sedi Avina, you know, John Sullivan, you know, they know they're not going to play, they know that the first choice are going to play, but I was always going to have to call upon them at some stage. And that was important. And even the lone players that came in, the Dale Russells, Danny Angesson, and Lee Cook, you know, they were lads that played a part. Hogan Ephraim, that was called a crucial goal against Huddersfield. We stopped their run. I think they were unbeaten for 40-plus games. And we stopped it, you know, live on Sky. And those lads played a massive part. I know people will always remember Jan, Jacko, Brad, you know, Wiggins, Solly, Pima, the regulars. They were the lads that played all the time, but these guys came in and contributed, scored goals. those lads and made sure that they were never forgotten the roles that they played.
So there we go, Chris Powell talking about the unsung heroes. I mean, like I said just before the start, I mean, Pritchard was one of them. I think, yeah, I think it's fair to say he was unsung. I remember we've talked about that Sheffield Wednesday away win, the 1-0 with Jacko. I remember when Pritchard went off late on in that game, thinking, oh, he's had such a good game. He was being Bradley Pritchard, basically. He was all over,
yeah,
all over the pitch. But I mean, everyone has their favourites. Tom, did you have a favourite sort of unsung hero from that season?
It would probably be Andy Hughes. which is
again, yeah. Yeah,
but I always remember, and a lot of the games he started on the bench, but I remember him coming on and just doing a job and securing things when we needed those backs against the wall victories. He came on and did that job, and he's another one that I know Powell has since talked about, and obviously you can see with him going on to start a coaching career, his just being around the dressing room, how important that was, and his experience, because a lot of that squad was quite young, and he came in and he just gave that added experience a motivation, and you could see him when he came on geeing other players up. And we've talked about leaders so many times, and he was another one that, okay, he didn't, I don't think, probably played about 20 odd games that season, but such a big character around the group, and as I say, just kind of secured those extra points for us.
I had a particularly painful moment this weekend last year when I was covering an FA Cup semi-final, and I was down in the mix zone watching players of one of our rival teams coming out, and then I completely forgot he worked there. I just saw Andy Hughes walking along the mix zone in a Palace suit. I was like, oh god, because I did love him. Another one I'd written down on mine, I mean, Just players who came in and just did something. There was Danny and Gessen, scored one or two very vital goals, yeah, at the end of that season. Again, in terms of unsung heroes, you forget about, you know, Chris had to bring in extra players as that season goes on, and he obviously picked wisely, I guess.
I mean, another one who gets slightly forgotten, I think, is Danny Hollands, and you know, he played more or less the entire season, scored quite a few goals actually. I mean,
he had triplets in that time as well.
Must have got to about 10, I think, and yet generally he was sort of the unfussy, the unfussy central midfielder. Dale Stevens, I was looking up the stats when I was writing the piece for The Voice. Dale Stevens didn't play as often as I thought that season. Actually, he had a long spell out with injury. I think he only played 28 games.
Yeah.
Which surprised me. That was obviously why Hogan, Ephraim, and those sorts of players came in. Daryl Russell, but yeah, throughout Hollands was there, and he stepped up and did the goal scoring, the creating as well.
And Stevens scored one of the goals of the season. Actually, people argue that Jans is the best one against Hartlepool in that final there, but that late equaliser against Bury at the time kept our unbeaten home record going. This was in January. Sort of gets people. Now we sort of mentioned just while we're talking off there in terms of a character that we all remember. I mean, Ben Hamer was one of the most eccentric. I mean, people say you have to be eccentric to be a goalkeeper. He's probably the most eccentric person I've ever seen playing for Charlton. What was he like around the place?
Really good fun. One of those players that keeps everyone in the camp amused. You know, really dedicated though. Him, John Sullivan, another sort of really good humoured guy. Ben Roberts had a really close knit group. With some of the younger keepers as well, they sort of drove themselves on. John Sullivan is a good person to mention. You know, hardly played.
Someone's mentioned him on Twitter actually.
Yeah, not even playing now. I think he's out in Las Vegas doing some sort of job. Yeah, I mean, yeah. What have the listeners said as unsung heroes?
That's the only one we've got so far. But Sean Doran just said John Sullivan, the backup goalie, very active on social media, which is something we talked about earlier about that kind of link between player and fan, and never seemed to get angry. At being left out, and how could you when Ben Hamer was playing so well? But that's the only mention I've seen.
A couple more have just rolled in fact in the last few seconds. Bob Liscombe says, how about Danny Haynes, when fit, a great striker? So now, he didn't play much at all that season. I think the next season was when we started to really appreciate what he had, when he had his hamstrings intact. Danny Hollands was mentioned by Craig, who said that. Pete O'Sullivan said unsung hero Danny and Gessen, important goals. He says it's amazing how Chris Powell recalls all the details. I mean, we heard it earlier on when he's talking about he can remember all the stats like that. It's, I mean, when I was a younger fan, I could do that. I can't do that anymore. But is he like a little schoolboy in the way he thinks about football sometimes? Or
it's an oft known fact that as a football reporter, you should never trust any statistic that any football manager or player tells you. Always check the statistic. So
like a 10-game league, a 10-team league at the bottom of League One, that sort of thing.
Maybe. I mean, the actual truth, we cut it out of this, we cut out of these excerpts, but Chris did at one point, we were talking about Paul Hayes, and he was remembering the game against Bury, and you know, he just said, "Oh yeah, Hazy got the first, Jacko got the second away at Bury." So you know, he very much has that that season in particular down pat. Yeah.
Day after my birthday, that game, so I can remember that one. Mark just tweeted in saying, "I love Bradley Wright Phillips. The guy who sat behind me hated him and always criticised him. So whenever Bradley scored, I'd turn around and high-five everyone except him." we're coming to the end of the Chris Powell interview. We've got one more thing, really. And, mate, you sort of asked him what he's... for an overall conclusion and his perhaps his regrets. And I'm sure there's... with the way things panned out after this season, I'm sure that there's plenty of those.
You know, I look at Bournemouth, I look at Eddie Howe, and I look at the journey he's had with them, and I always think that could have been us at Charlton. I always do, because he was given a chance at a club that he was affiliated with. He was manager of a real tough period initially, got through it, just like, you know, I did initially. And then he was allowed to build and grow, which all managers want. And if you're given that time, you can get that back in, like we did in that first full season, then all of a sudden you're on that journey, you're on that road that you want to be on, then you need to have that back into sale. And that's what I felt was the trick we missed, was we had that first season in the Championship, and don't get me wrong, at times when we lost to Middlesbrough, and you know, things weren't looking great for us, and then the infamous Cardiff game, you know, we only lost 5 games on the road that year. Sometimes people don't remember that. You know, 5 games in the Championship on the road. It was brilliant. Of course, we got some results that went for us. I remember being sort of Leeds and Wolves last minute, and John Abeka doing, you know, what he did. But, you know, we got some really good results. You know, but the writing was sort of on the wall there. You know, I was told I was going to spend millions and all that. Obviously, it was a load of nonsense. You know, I signed Dorian De Witt on a free. You know, Salim Kerkar after a trial. You know, this was us trying to build. You know, and I just look back on the side that has done that. Like Southampton when they went up, they had that momentum. Like Bournemouth when they went up, and when they went up the season after, and they consolidated and went up. I wanted us to do the same. And we didn't, and sadly, progressively, it got worse. And yeah, I do look back with a touch of sadness, really, because everything was with us. The fans were coming back, they were back in their numbers, and, you know, the players were happy, but the change started to happen then. You know, Jackson, Kerman, Gab were all promised new deals, and we went up and stayed up. They did that, and then just felt, well, what's happened? All of a sudden, it kept happening. You know, these key players are all of a sudden going to be out of contract, and of course, the rest is history. So, you know, you have to look back with fondness on that year, which I always do. It's forever with me now, which is brilliant. I'd love to do it again, you know, with a side, and who knows where that may happen again. And you know, that's something that you know, I look back with complete fondness. You know, fans will forever talk about that season because of all the great moments in that season. When you look back, there's so many massive moments in games, in individual performances, team performances, individual goals. You know, yeah, scoring that goal at home to Hartlepool at the end of the season, I mean, you couldn't have written it. You just couldn't have written that sort of goal right at the end of the season. But they all, every single one of them contributed, every single one. You know, there's not one player throughout that squad that season that didn't contribute. Every single one of them did. And that will be with me for, well, so I leave this place. I don't know how to put that. Maybe don't put it like that.
I don't think he was talking about the North Circular when he said that play. But I mean, the way there are regrets going forward. I mean, but I think before we talk about that, because the final three or four games of that season, when everything had been sorted, was just party time. I mean, talk about the day at Carlisle when we retweeted the video you sent us earlier of the celebrations on the pitch at Carlisle. Then you had the Champions Day against Wickham, where there was that moment when Dave Lockwood shouted champions, which is just one of the most special moments you'll have down here. And then there was the celebration. I mean, there was Preston away, where we all went dressed as astronauts and whatnot. And then there was the celebration day against Hartlepool, where just to cap off that season, Jan scored that ridiculous goal, which I have the unpopular opinion that he didn't mean it. But because I'm certainly told me that at a dinner a year later. But moments like that, as a football fan at this club, don't come along too often, and you have to remember them. You have to cherish moments like that.
Well, one of my regrets is I didn't go to Carlisle. if we remember, there was two other results I think that day that had to go our way, and then we had to win away at Carlisle. Such a long way. I thought, I tell you what, no, I won't bother. Gary went up there by himself. And then, obviously, I was following it at home, and it was getting more and more exciting, so I was on the computer, and then everything went our way, and Gary went off to sort out all the post-match stuff, and so I was the one who got to tweet that we'd been promoted, and when it was all confirmed, and so on. So it's always nice when that tweet gets repeated every year, sort of around that time. That's always quite nice.
Yeah. Well,
but it all stems from the fact that I didn't go. I should have been there.
Well, I remember being on the phone to my old man. Cause when the full-time whistle went, there was people down the front. And I was thinking, you guys are idiots, because if you go on the pitch, a goal's going to go in elsewhere. And I was like, I can't risk it. But I remember being on the phone to my dad and, again, watching a video that one of my friends had put on YouTube of that moment when my dad said, yeah, it's sorted. And I was like, oh, we're up. And it's such a special moment. And then, I mean, that home game against Hartlepool, Red Hat, was it the parachutes? Was that the Red Arrows?
Red Devils,
sorry, yeah, we're landing on the pitch. Did they bring the trophy or the match ball?
They brought the match ball, yeah. I mean, I was in charge of obviously organising all those match day activities, and let me tell you, it was an absolute nightmare.
I can imagine. And we had the bizarre sideshow of a load of Smurfs turning up from Hartlepool as well. But I mean, days like that, you don't forget those days, as Chris Powell says, until you shuffle off this earth, do you, Tom?
Absolutely, yeah. And as you said there, as Charlton fans, we don't get them very often. So they're ones to cherish. And like Matt, I wasn't at Carlisle. As I say, I work Saturdays, but managed to finish at 3 that Saturday. And I remember just legging it home and just watching on Final Score and then probably following your social media from then on. And don't remember much of the night, but it's just such a good time to be a Charlton fan, and certainly memories that I won't ever forget.
Yeah, Finch has just tweeted in saying he wasn't needed for the Carlisle game for work, and he just couldn't get there, and he said gutted does not cover it. I mean, I remember midway through that season, I'd made a conscious decision that I was going to every game, so I'd booked my Carlisle away train tickets, and they cost me about £20 when I booked them, so I was really lucky. But I remember my brother, Con, who'd only decided in the week leading up, had to walk from where we live in West Wickham to Bromley South to make sure he was on the coach to go up there, and then waving him off on the coach to go home. People just went out of their way. Ollie Groom, I think, hitchhiked with some randoms to get up there, and then obviously ran onto the pitch as well. It's such a special day.
Quick story from the Hartlepool game. I was in charge of, say, the post-match stuff, so I had to deal with all the players and their families on the lap of honour, and trying to get everyone round to see all the fans and wave. And it was just, you know, it was terrible. I think I had the least amount of fun on that day that anyone in the ground had. But so we're in the middle of all this, and I'm suddenly aware that there's this voice shouting. He's like, Matt, Matt. And I'm like, you know, I'm trying to do something. Like, Matt. And I turn around, and it's Chris. And he says, oh, you know, what do you want, Chris? You know, I'm trying to deal with all this. And he's got the trophy. He says, come and have your photo taken with the trophy.
Nice.
Forget all that.
And is that framed somewhere in your...
I haven't got it. It was, to be honest, yeah, I don't know the photographer who took it. He just grabbed a photographer, and I've got other photos with the trophy, but not that one.
Excellent. Alex Debman said, I went to Carlisle solo and ended up injuring/meeting Aaron Paul, with one of the guys, Aaron, at full time in the celebration. Now, the other thing we touched on there is regrets. And I mean, there can't be a Charlton fan who doesn't regret the way things went from there, because Chris mentioned, I think, Southampton there, the way that they... I think it was Norwich as well, that I think that over the couple of seasons had gone up in quick succession. We didn't do that, and that's got to be the way that things turned out after that, panned out after that, is obviously such a huge regret, because we could have done something special.
Yeah, it's more that we just didn't have the opportunity. You know, if we'd have had the opportunity and failed, then fair enough. But to not really have that opportunity, and to for him not to get any support, it wasn't just the support he needed; it was any support whatsoever. He was scrabbling around for signings. You know, he was just doing anything he could to get a team out at the start of that season. You know, our eventual finishing position just off the playoffs was nothing short of a miracle. You know, it was even better than the promotion season, in my opinion. It's a real regret that support wasn't there when we needed it.
Yeah, I guess the best way to sort of end the Chris Powell segment, which has taken up the entire show really, but we will very quickly look back at Chesterfield. There's a question from Bob Liscombe. He sent us a couple of tweets to my personal account. He said he remembers the Chris Powell tunnel jump, which is always excellent, but then he says, right, we all know we would want Chris Powell back as our next manager. Does Matt, as he knows him better than us, think he would return?
It's a difficult one. He's out of work at the moment, so I imagine he'd leap at the opportunity, tunnel leap at the opportunity.
He's got unfinished business here, surely.
Exactly. People say don't come back. That was the thing hurled at him when he came back. The third or the fourth time.
Yeah.
He's always said, well, why wouldn't I? I know this club so well. I have that connection with the fans. Why not?
Right, excellent. Right, we've got 5 minutes. We're going to go slightly over time because there's a couple of things to talk about. We do need to talk about yesterday's game, a 2-1 win up at already relegated Chesterfield. Neither of you two were lucky enough to be there, so I had to enjoy it on my own out of us three. But not the greatest game I've ever seen at already relegated Chesterfield. We took the lead through Jake Forster-Kaski's strike, and then Ricky Holmes got a consecutive free kick goal. So this one took a massive deflection off the wall. And then just as I finished my match report, about 5 minutes from the end, saying that we'd won 2-0 in a very comfortable, fairly standard away game, it all sort of almost fell to pieces in injury time. Ezri Konsa made a mistake at the back, allowing them to pull one back, and then Forster-Kaski won and then missed a penalty, so I had to add all that in at the end. Obviously, we caught up with Carl Robinson after the game. Now, we talked about the game for about 30 seconds, and then he took us down a different path, which I found more interesting than the game that just happened. So this is what Carl Robinson had to say after yesterday's win at Chesterfield.
Carl, nice to end your away days with a win on the road.
Yeah, it could have been a lot better. Disappointed that goal at the end. He'll learn from that. He's a young player that will learn and grow. I'd rather do it when we're 2-0 up away from home. It doesn't cost any points. Sometimes they cost you points. But I thought we were faced strong there. I thought we looked comfortable. The game plan was to soak it up and to hit them on the counter attack whenever we could. I thought it looked like we could do that. And I thought Jake and the three in there were very, very good. I thought they moved the ball very efficiently. And our two wide players caused threats. Colin and Joe have played much football recently, so to lose them towards the end of the game, I thought we missed them. But it was a good all-round performance. And like I say, thank you to the fans for travelling all year. I know it's hard. I know it's been a hard year for everybody. But you're still turning up your numbers, you're still singing, you're still supporters, so we can't ask any more. So thank you for that. Like I said, I want to stay top of that league. It looks like now, mathematically, we can't be caught by anyone. And we're catching people above us all the time. I think if we win our game next week and results go forward, you jump up two more places, which I know it's not enough. I know it's not enough, but we're starting to take shape a little bit more.
After that goal against Southend was taken away from him, it was nice for Jake to get his first.
The goal against Southend wasn't taken away. I think it was Jake. That goal against Southend taken away from you? No, Jake's still a fish.
Don't be too quick, Jake.
It's up for debate. Jake's still claiming that. He said it wasn't about. But I've always said about Jake, he needs to do more. His talent is unquestionable. But he needs to add goals to his game consistently. So he wanted a penalty so much, he wants to get more goals. And he can play in a number of positions, but he's such a talent. And his ball striking is exceptional. Hopefully now he'll go away, he'll play well next week, he'll have a good pre-season, and he'll come back twice the player he is at the moment. And that's got to be his aim. And if it isn't, well, he's letting his talent down because he's so talented, and hopefully we can build on that.
We saw a first league start for Carl and Ahern Grant. What did you make of his performance? Is this a chance to look at him before next season?
Yeah, it was nice to have a good look at him, obviously with Joe Rebo starting in there as well. So there was a number of academy players, and it was very young. I think our average age was 23, 24 early. So it was a young average age. Hopefully we can build on that youth and grow that youth and we're still nowhere near the Arsenal we want to be. We're still a long way away, but yeah, I thought he was very good. He looked very threatening. His decision making can be better. Sometimes he dribbles when he can pass and passes when he can dribble. But that's just a lack of games and a lack of game understanding, and hopefully that'll come.
Duke Steele and Barnes on the bench as well. Do you think they might get a chance next week?
We'll see. I know Barnes he won't, because I want to play Souls. And I think obviously hopefully in the summer Jacko's gonna maybe come more and do some more coaching next season. So I want Jacko to lead the team out next week. I think it's gonna be an important game for him to lead his team out. I think with Souls stood behind him, it'd be nice to finish off the season with the Charlton sort of players who have Charlton through the blood to be on the pitch. It'd be nice to finish that. So it's a case of maybe one or two be more to get them on the pitch and get them minutes, and then Jacko and Souls. I want to see them back together again, because it's they're top players.
You mentioned Jacko there. Am I right in thinking his contract's up at the end of the year? So I mean, has a decision been made on that?
And yeah, we've made a decision. He's made a decision. He knows what I think of him. I think he sees the relationship that we have. I want good people at this place. I want people who can teach me about John. I've got Lee Bowyer, who can teach me about this club from years ago. And Jacko, over recent years, through success and through the negativity, he's been through all of them. And it's nice for me to learn from that and to grow and to try and educate the new players on what we expect, what Charlton DNA should be like and what a player should look like. And it's so important to our development of the club, Jacko.
So can we expect an announcement on that?
Hopefully this week, yeah. Verbally done, I think so. He'll be alright, Jacko. You know.
Excellent. Last game of the season next week, so what were your plans for it? More youngsters?
No, I want to win the game. If we win, we can jump up two places. So it is what it is. Be nice to finish off with, three wins in the last four? Nice to finish off with four wins in that period, and be nice with the first three successive wins on the bounce. It's got to be our aim and our objective, and we can build on it for next season.
In the words of Charlton Exile, it's all going so well. But, I mean, we have to keep the show current, don't we? Otherwise, if it was up to me, we'd do a show looking back at our 1947 Cup win every week. But there you go. Carl Robertson talking after yesterday. I think, you know, the season's over. No one really cares about it. I mean, it was a nice win. And there was I think everyone who went yesterday enjoyed their day, particularly the group of about 40 lads who were on the Chesterfield train platform after the game, who were certainly sozzled, but certainly seemed to enjoy it. But, you know, season's over now. We don't need to concentrate too much on the game, but there is something important that came out of that. And Cole's admitted that the Jacko is going to be here next season in some capacity. Now, it's sort of up for debate what that capacity is going to be. He says he's going to lean more towards coaching. He said it was important that he leads out the team. So that sounds like he's never going to play again. But, I mean, he's probably going to be a player coach role, I imagine, going forward for Jacko.
You would have thought so. I mean, I'd be surprised if Johnny thinks his career is over at this point. I think he still thinks there's plenty left for him to do. I mean, it's great news that he'll still be here. He's you know, someone who's synonymous with Charlton in recent years and knows the club really well, cares about the club, and we need as many of those around at the moment as possible, I think.
Well, in terms of characters, I mean, the way Carl's talks about wanting to rebuild the squad, he's brought in Steve Gallen now, the former QPR coach, and he's talking about the right characters. I mean, that is the right sort of stuff he should be saying.
Yes, I'd question, you know, he's brought in a new head scout and who's a coach, and he's not a scout. Yeah. Slight query about that with me, but he's his own man. I mean, the scouting seems to have been a shambles over recent years anyway. So any improvement on that is good to hear. He's obviously starting to think about next year. I'd have liked to have saw it happen 3, 4, 5 months ago. But
that's the problem when you're not here long enough. You can't start planning ahead long enough, and that's why I guess we've been talking about over the last few weeks about, because there are lots of questions about whether Carl was going to continue, especially when we were in that horrible run of eight games without a win. We've been saying quite a lot on this show, especially in my personal opinion, that you need to have stability, and that's something that we've lacked. So that's why it's important that you don't sack your manager every 5 minutes, isn't it?
Yes, I should say I'm firm with Charlton Exile in terms of whether I rate Carl Robinson or not, but I'm not hypocritical. We can't, you know, this club is in desperate need of stability. We can't afford to keep sacking managers.
Yeah.
He's a manager we've got. Much as I can't stand the word that comes out of his mouth, so contradictory, so unprofessional, I think, in some regards. But I can't see us getting rid of him either.
There you go. Right, I think we should end the show here because we've already gone over time. But it's been so great to reminisce 5 years ago, like we say, this weekend, since Dave Lockwood was on that Valley pitch shouting out that word champions. And we heard from Chris Powell there. Matt, we're eternally grateful to yourself and Rick for bringing us that interview, and to yourself for coming in this evening. Don't forget, obviously, if you want to read more of that interview, you can get the Voice of the Valley. I guess Rick's going to be selling it at the last home game as well.
Yeah, it'll be on sale as usual, last game. Yep.
So, but if not, you can head over to the Voice of the Valley website to buy a copy of that as well. So, Matt, thank you so much for coming in this evening.
No problem. Really enjoyed it. Yeah. Really enjoyed being a part of Chant Life. And, you know, I was sort of part of bringing it back,
yeah,
I think, seven years ago now. So it's great that it's still going strong. Two shows a week these days. It's great. Brilliant.
Yeah, knackering two shows a week. I'm glad you brought it back 7 years ago, though. Tom, Stillwater Charlton Live these days. Thanks for coming.
Cheers,
in. Mate. It's been excellent reminiscing about the show. With two more shows left to go this season. We'll be back for a big match preview on Thursday. And then the final show of the season will take place after the Swindon home game. So while you lot are all heading home after whatever happens, as long as the game finishes by 7 o'clock, of course, meet myself, Tom and Nathan and Terry and everyone, Lewis probably, Sue hopefully, as many people as possible, maybe even Crispy will come in for one.
Head chef.
Yeah, oh yeah, Mark's coming in as well, yeah, to feed us, which is important. We're going to hang around and do a show at 7 o'clock next Sunday to finish off the season. But thank you so much for listening tonight. I hope you've enjoyed listening to the Chris Powell interview. I certainly have. And like I say, thanks for listening. Thanks for your memories of that special season, and for tuning in tonight. We'll see you on Thursday.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.